welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I am Doug Heck, your host, our special guest, known to all, the one and only Dr. Ray Guarendi. His book, Family Faith Under Fire, Practical Answers to Everyday Challenges, proudly published by EWTN Publishing. And of course, it's always a pleasure to get to see you in person.
There's people out there thinking, I don't know who he is.
Oh, I doubt that. If they haven't, they'll soon find out in the next couple of minutes exactly why you're notorious. I mean, famous. That's here on...
Choose your adjectives, please.
On EWTN. One of the things struck me right away was that you dedicated this to your dear friend and mentor and a man of God, the late, great Al Cresta from Ave Maria Radio, who all of us miss dearly. You called him not only a friend, but a mentor. Explain.
I met him when he was on a Christian station. I had written a book called Back to the Family, and I was out of the Catholic Church at the time. And Al was piqued by the book. Mm-hmm. We went out to dinner, mm-hmm. and we just talked. Mm-hmm. And the guy's encyclopedic in his knowledge,
right.
and his ability to pull threads and just weave a tapestry of understanding amazed me, mm-hmm. just amazed me all the time.
Right, absolutely. That's what made his show, Question in the Afternoon, so good.
Sometimes he was smarter than the guests.
Yeah, well, many times he was, and you would have to...
Topic.
That's one thing I'm lucky I've never had to worry about. So you say in the beginning of the book, you talk about yourself as a clinical psychologist. Now, does that mean you can't get your own set up? You have to work in a clinic? Is that what it means?
No, that is a special type of psychology.
Mostly
involved in testing and therapy.
Okay. I thought maybe you couldn't get enough people coming.
Well, I can't, but that's not relevant
getting
to that.
Getting enough people to come and see you. But it was a secular kind of clinical situation.
I was educated at Kent State.
Right.
Very secular. And religion was something you didn't broach.
Right.
Even though 90% of the people who walked into your office had some kind of religious content in their lives, but you were to be virulently neutral toward religion.
And why was that decided? Had it always been like that?
I think when Freud came along, who was a resolute atheist, had just decided
that
religion is neurotic.
So from the 20s on, you're
dealing with that. You've got to shed some of this stuff, because if you don't, you're going to be neurotic.
Right, exactly. Well, they used to say when Catholics went to confession, they didn't need to go to psychiatrists.
There was a lot of that. I think we shrink types have replaced the priests.
Right, in many cases, right. Now, you also talk about the fact that as you were going along, more Christians began to seek your guidance. Why? Did they hear about the kind of approach, the Christian approach you were giving in your counseling, or what? How did that build up?
The main healing factor in therapy, no matter what particular type of therapy you practice, is called the therapeutic alliance. In essence, that is the client's trust that you understand them and their deepest held view of life. Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes, and I've had people in my office who will come to me and say, our previous therapist told us to divorce. We don't want a divorce. We're Catholic. We want to work this out. But our therapist looked at us and said, no, you need to split. That's best for both of you. They felt like they don't respect or understand what means most to me. And people started seeking that out. It was we shrink types have slipped from the idea of we are automatically the most smart people in the room for your psychological well-being to we better make a little more effort to really understand what matters to people.
Mm-hmm. Has that changed at all, or is that still the response?
There is, within psychology and mental health, there is now a stream of more people who are belonging to associations who are saying, I want to practice with a respect of this person's worldview.
Okay. You say this book itself collects those questions you're often asked regarding issues of faith and family, and including some questions you grapple with personally as well. What would be an example of one of the things that you talk about here that you really are talking about from your own personal experience?
When I left the church, because I thought that God's God, Jesus is Jesus, what does it matter? I'm going to go someplace where I'm comfortable. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this church over here, they got a lot more fun groups and a lot more people that are carrying on, and I get to get into the Bible studies, and all of that. And it appealed to me up to about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then I started to notice things I didn't understand and logical inconsistencies. Mm-hmm. And it was a struggle for me. One of my big ones was when we were in Bible study one time, people kept asking the question, why are people so bothered by Christians? What is it about Christians that bugs people? And the answer was, well, down deep, they know that we're right. Mm-hmm. And they know that the flickering morals still in them is being challenged. And I remember thinking after that Bible study, I'm not sure that's it. Mm-hmm. The question for me was, is it because I'm holy or is it because I'm a jerk? Mm-hmm. You know, I really had to look at that. Am I holier than thou or in fact holy?
Right. Which are obviously totally different
Very.
Situations. Now, you talk about, in the first section, you talk about Mass, and the questions have to do with people going to Mass and what you refer to as Mass resistance. And, of course, this is something that speaks to so many of us. My daughter, age 14, starting to resist going to church. Now, which do you like better, Twinkies or lima beans?
That's exactly right. That's the one thing that parents get most nervous about. Well, you know, if I force her to go to church, she's going to puke up religion when she's 21, and it's going to be my fault. And the kids feed into this because the number one thing that so many adult kids tell their parents, you know why I don't go to church? Because you made me go to church. That's why. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Right.
That is absolutely not true. It's usually the moral issues mm-hmm. that do it. But I'm going to make mom and dad feel rotten because they made me go
to
church.
Well, they're just too lazy to go, too.
Well, that's a big factor, too. But the issue of, what do I do? What do I do? They're not into this. How do I force them? And I always tell parents, one thing you know for sure, they're going to get no exposure if they don't go. If they do go, who knows what can touch their soul? Mm-hmm. Plus, it comes down to, this is what we do as our family. And many adults will tell me, I'm glad they made me go to church.
Right,
and I realize
absolutely.
It. Yeah, sure.
Well, I think that's what honesty, people, and maturity will go and say about many things that their parents, quote unquote, force them to do, that they in retrospect.
Parenting is force.
Right.
We force you to do your schoolwork. We force you to treat your sister nice.
Right.
We force you not to lie. We there's all kinds of force in parenting because kids don't have the self-discipline to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. So this is the one thing that people get really nervous about.
Mm-hmm. Well, they get nervous, don't they, because they've been told by the quote-unquote experts that
rebellious
especially
and resentment.
And younger people today have more autonomy, they have their privacy, you know, the state's looking out for them because some of your belief systems are a little arcane.
If I were to fault parents on this, Doug, well, my grandmother came from Italy and went to St. Anthony's, Mother Angelica's Parish in Canton, Ohio. If the priest said it, that's good enough. Mm-hmm. That's the way it was.
Right.
Nowadays, you gotta know why the church teaches what she teaches to give it to the kids. You can't just say, we do this because it's good, we do this because you're supposed to, we do this because this is what God says. They got to see the wisdom of the church.
Well, let me ask you also, when you're talking about force kids to go to school and all that, the other side is that, you know, you send a kid to school, if he doesn't go to school, he's going to fail, which is going to be, there's some downside clearly one can see. Going to church or mass, what's the difference? Everybody, there's either no heaven or everybody goes there, or, you know, everybody I know who doesn't go seems to be having a good time.
Yes, and they're good people.
Mm-hmm.
Father Spitzer, that you know very well, said among the young people, one of the main reasons that he sees that they're abandoning the church in wholesale numbers is they think science has basically made church irrelevant.
Right. Yeah.
When in fact, if you know what science says about a lot of things, you're going to see that the church's wisdom is right parallel to science. Same thing with the morals.
Mm-hmm.
Most kids that I talk to don't know why the church teaches what she teaches about marriage, about contraception, about divorce, about homosexuality, about sexual practice. They don't know that. They just know, well, you're not supposed to.
Right.
That's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
And in many respects, the parents don't, well, they either don't know or they don't tell them.
Right. Right. Well, they don't want to not be a friend to their child. They don't want to be putting onerous restrictions upon them because they'll rebel once they get out. And you talk about it here in one of the other letters or a question somebody had, you know, well, I'm afraid I'll ruin my relationship and, you know, I won't have a future relationship with my child.
You know where this friend thing is coming from a lot? It's coming from the reduced birth rate. Right. You got one or two kids. You can't afford to, you know, blow the relationship. I got 10 kids.
About five of them I'm doing okay with. You know what I mean? Right. I got a 50% approval rating, which is pretty high. You know,
right.
If somebody says, I don't like you, Dad, I go, hey, I got a bunch who do.
Let me find the one who likes you this week.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'll take out in public.
I got one who likes me every week. So, yeah, well, that's clearly the thing. And even with the focus, I think, and what the expectations are, if you're talking about one child, everything's poured into that one or two child. So, right. That becomes the total focus. Now, you talked about in this particular one, a television show that invited me to discuss the topic, should parents force their values upon their children, or should their children be free to choose their own? It didn't take a shrink to analyze that show's bias.
Oh, it was so obvious. They wanted me to get in there and say, from a psychological perspective, children need to autonomously decide.
Mm-hmm.
And my point was, what do we let them autonomously decide about everything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to punch your sister? Well, okay, that's, you know, I guess that's you're expressing your true self. And I'll tell you, I see an awful lot of what would otherwise look as surface religious people saying, no, I'm going to let them decide how they want to view this. Because the default position is none.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it. You don't go, well, you know, I kind of like that religion thing because they tell me I have to live according to certain moral guidelines, and I really don't understand why I have to, because it certainly seems to curtail my freedom. So I'm going to lay that one aside for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Culture offers me a bunch of other options.
Right, definitely. You also have another one about a 20-year-old returned from college, and, you know, he's old enough now, he doesn't have to worry about going to college anymore. I mean, he goes to college, but he ended up going to Mass, and, you know, the parents like, what am I supposed to do? You know, and you're, of course, you're dealing with somebody who's been living on their own for a period of time and feels, you know.
College has outlived its usefulness, I think, in our culture, and more people are realizing that.
Mm-hmm.
It is good for certain things, but the idea that any college education is automatically great and is automatically going to put you above the economic crowd is starting to evaporate.
Especially considering if you weigh what the cost benefit analysis of
it
is for
you. I say, okay, let me see if I understand this. You're going to send your kid away to probably lose his faith. I mean, the majority of kids lose their faith in college. You're probably going to have a whole bunch of loans when you get out. If he gets a certain kind of degree, a certain Bachelor of Arts, he's probably not going to work in that field, and 10 years hence, most of them don't.
Right.
It's a lose, lose, lose. Well, they say, well, what do you do? I say, well, one thing you consider is local, at least for a year or two, get a little more moral stability underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
You save some money. And also, you recognize that if he wants to be an electrician or a plumber or a carpenter, skilled carpenter, he's going to make $6,000.
Right.
$6,000.
And there's even a lot of other jobs that the reality is the amount of learning you need to actually have to do that job, even from a straight educational perspective, as opposed to the number of other courses that you're milled through, let alone the living facilities. I mean, so many of these colleges you go, and they're beautiful and are wonderful, and they attract, because they're attracting money, so they have these beautiful dorms and things, you know, that are nicer than living at your house. And they wonder why these kids come back, and then they afford some little apartment that isn't near as good as the wonderful thing they had at college.
I was 19 years old. I stayed out till 4 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, got away with it once, I'll try it again. Got away with it a second time, my dad caught me the third time. I was a sophomore in college, he put a curfew on me. I couldn't believe this. Sophomore in college with a midnight curfew, what are you doing? You know, I fought it, but I didn't beat it.
So here's another story. My 23-year-old daughter slowly drifted away from Mass after she moved out on her own. What can I do to persuade her that she should be going to Mass?
The problem is when a parent is in a situation like that, Doug, they feel like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd I go wrong? You know, I should have prayed the rosary in Aramaic, kneeling on broken glass while we levitated, you know, but my husband let him sit on the couch. Spiritual sloppiness, that's what it was. And they feel like failures, so then they get desperate. I got to preach to her. I gotta say, you know, that new priest, we had a new priest there, and I'll tell you what, he's great, he's a young guy, and why don't you come, because they got a spaghetti meal afterwards, and the kid's giving off signals like, back off, Mom, back off, Mom, and they don't read the signals. Mm-hmm. The first thing I tell parents is, you gotta know when to back off. The desperation oftentimes comes from our own feelings of failure. Mm-hmm. I blew it, okay? You gotta know when to back off, you read the cues. Here's what I also tell them. I say, okay, so you don't go to church. Why? Just tell me why. Don't argue with them.
Don't counter them. Just say, I want to get inside your head, and I want to know how it is that you think this. Well, I don't think you need to go to church to believe in God. I'm a good person. Okay, fair enough. How do you decide what good is? Tell me, how do you know what good is? Mm-hmm. Okay, and certain religions believe that good is sacrificing yourself as a martyr to kill other people. Is that good? Well, no, that's not good. So how do you decide good? In other words, you almost got to be a shrink a little bit. You got to say, I got to try to understand why you think abortion is okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's not a baby? What? Well, it's not really a baby yet. Okay, so when is it a baby? Right. Tell me when you think it becomes a baby. I got to do that as a shrink in my office because people tell me a lot of nonsense stuff. And if I would say, what are you, nuts? Mm-hmm. Get out of here, but pay me first. I can't do that. I have to get inside their head, and that's what I tell parents. Inside your kid's head.
Well, do you think in some ways there's been an inverse of social pressure where maybe 50 years ago the social pressure would have been you got to go to church because it's part of the community and people would know whether you were there or not. Today the social pressure is, especially for younger people, you know, in the virtual reality world, is well, you don't really do those things.
There isn't a whole lot of social pressure left other than don't be too religious.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's where the real social pressure is. Right. Don't have more than 1.86 children. We will abuse you.
Right. You talk about one of the letters here with the families with, you know, 5 or 6 kids who have to be made feel
sucking
embarrassed.
Sucking up the rainforest.
Right, right, exactly.
I always say that. I said, we live in a culture where sexually you can do anything, anywhere, anytime with anyone. The only sin left sexually is having more than 1.86 children when you're married.
Well, that's why they've turned abortion into a sacrament, and that's why it's so important because otherwise we can't have the libertinism that we want to have and live in a culture where I'm not held accountable for anything I personally do.
I'm a shrink,
and I see the misery that breeds. Mm-hmm. I see it in my office. I see people that are hurting, anxious, nervous, depressed, drug-addled, all because they just decided, well, this God thing isn't really relevant. You know, I don't really pay much attention to that. I'm going to sort of live as I choose and as the culture says I should. Mm. And it leads to misery.
Right. Right. And you see it when you hear about famous people and their lives.
Oh,
with the behind
they have
the
it
scenes.
All.
And it's so often a disaster. Here's one, too. My husband is a good father, but seldom attends church with the family. My 12-year-old saying, why do I have to go if dad doesn't go?
They did a survey some time ago. It was an interesting survey. They said if both parents take the kids to church, there's a high likelihood, like 60-70%, that the kids will attend church as adults. If mom alone, it drops dramatically, 40%. If dad alone, it's the same percentage as if both.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is. I really don't know how to speculate on that, Doug. But I told the mom in this question, I said, mm-hmm. explain to your son that dad made this choice. He's decided this. I can't make dad go to church. Dad has to come to his own realization on how important this is, son. My responsibility is you. Mm-hmm. I've got to expose you to this. Right. But kids are going to look for any excuse.
Right.
You know, Pop's not doing it. My second cousin, once removed, lives out in Idaho. He doesn't go
kids
either.
Next door don't
That's
do it.
That's right.
They don't have to go to bed at that time. The Way We Were, kind of a mediocre movie or song. Throughout my late teens and 20s,
could you say that about Streisand and Redford? Yeah,
well, I like Redford. I'm not big on Streisand. Though it was set during a war, so it was interesting. And the film business. But, of course, it had the whole communist thing kind of backwards. How much, if anything, do I tell them the idea of... You know, and we've had this in other questions, the idea of, like, I'm trying to tell them the right thing to do, but, you know, the things I did and all of that stuff's going to the back of my mind, and I'm assuming the devil's in there going, where do you get off telling anybody
need
anything?
Need to know.
Okay.
Why do they need to know this? You ask yourself the question, what is the purpose of me letting them know what I did when I was 19?
Right.
What is the purpose for this? Now, the problem you run into is grandma or grandpa.
You know, your dad, he was a hellraiser when he was a kid. I should tell you sometime some of the things he did. That's where you got to try to shut the grandparents up, because the kids will immediately use that. Immediately will use whatever you tell them. And I also tell this to parents, just a good comeback line.
You know, you're right. I did a lot of wrong and stupid things when I was a kid. And I learned firsthand that as a parent, I don't want you to do those things. Right. So the reason I am the parent I am today is because I was the kid I was then.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it always strikes me odd because we seem to have no trouble with ex-drug addicts and all these other people who experience these horrible things, being the people who explain the best to other people about how to avoid these problems, except when it comes to a parent explaining their past.
I was in a group at the VA, ran a group in the VA. Guy came in, he says, "You ever been in prison?" Mm-hmm. I said, "No." "What are you going to tell me then?" I said, "Well, maybe it's because I haven't been in prison that I have something to tell you."
Maybe how to keep you out of prison.
Yes.
How to keep you out of prison. This one's interesting. New old wife. My husband and I have been married 13 years, no children. For that time, we were both non-practicing Catholics. However, last couple of years, my faith has awakened, and so I'm much more involved in my faith. He says, "I'm not the same woman he married."
I say, "You're not."
Right.
That's exactly right. But here's the difference. You can't, if you're a spouse who is shooting on ahead of your spouse in terms of your religious embrace, pardon a mixed metaphor, mm-hmm. the only way you're going to persuade them is to show them that your faith makes you easier to live with, kinder to live with, more serving to live with, more charitable to live with. It's not going to be because you can argue them into it. It's not going to be because when you're on the phone with your friends from church, you're happy and excited right. and they see that. It's not going to be because you go to Mass every day when he wants to have coffee with you. I've even told spouses, I say, "Hey, look, if you're going to go to daily Mass, try to find a way mm-hmm. that doesn't interfere with your time with your spouse."
Or make it seem like you're running out the door.
Yes. Yes. The key to the whole thing is they've got to see that because of your embrace of the faith, you are a much more wonderful human being to live with.
That's right, especially in that case, that particular case where there's no children. And so it's too, and it might feel, maybe he's lonely.
You know, and when you get, now as much as we like to listen to Catholic mm-hmm. media, you know, when you get in a car with him or her, you don't immediately put the Catholic station on. Listen to his sports station for a while. You don't have to automatically emphasize, you know, we're really kind of going in a different direction here.
Because I hope you listen to what this person's saying on the radio.
Yeah,
right
exactly.
I hope you heard that part, right?
Okay, Doug, this is probably going to surprise you, but of the people who have stormed out of my office, a number of times it has been religious spouses mm. who are mad at their spouse because they're not religious enough. Mm. And when I say, however delicately I try to say it, well, you operate out of a different set of standards. Mm-hmm. You know, your standards are you apologize more, you forgive more. They don't want to hear that. Mm. The problem is them. I'm already holy. Mm. They're not, and that's the problem. One lady crumpled it up and she threw it down on my desk and ran. I had a hard time unwrinkling that check, you know?
That's right.
Hoping my bank would take it.
Mm-hmm. In Counter Catholic, I thought that was interesting. Bishop Fulton Sheen always had that there's not 100 people in America who hate the Catholic Church, but there's millions who hate it for what they think it teaches. And you say, I don't agree. Explain.
Not to argue with somebody as wise as Bishop Sheen, but not anymore. Okay. I think the Catholic Church is hated exactly for who she is. Uh-huh. And the more she is who she is, the more the culture comes after her. Yeah, we've long since passed the point of, gee, isn't that wonderful, the Catholic Church is teaching on sexual morality and the Catholic Church is teaching on abortion and sanctity of life and end-of-life issues. Isn't that just precious?
Right.
No. It's like, who are they to say this?
So another one you talk about here in a couple of different ways where somebody might be in a youth group or attending a Bible study that has something that's outside of the Catholic sphere and their concerns about how they should do that or not do that.
When I was in the evangelical Bible studies, there were two themes. Jesus is Lord, the Catholic Church is wrong. Mm-hmm. Those are the two themes that hit most often. That happens in youth groups a lot. Mm-hmm. On one hand, they may say they're ecumenical, but you have to be aware of sometimes the subtle and not so subtle message that, yeah, well, you know, Catholic Church misses it here, misses it there, got it wrong on Scripture here, got it wrong on Scripture there. That's very common.
Well, I think it naturally has to come out because it really is, if they were right, then you should be Catholic.
Right.
So they must be wrong.
That's right.
Because you're supposed to be in this church and not in the Catholic Church.
And when I was leaving the evangelical church and I was in the Bible studies last days and I would bring up the Catholic viewpoint, but I didn't say it was the Catholic viewpoint, it was not acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
It was not something I remember when my wife
was moving towards the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. The kids came home and said, Mommy, they told us that we have to pray for the people of Mexico because they still have Christ on the church. He didn't rise, or on the cross, he didn't rise.
Oh, okay.
And that was, my wife said, wait a minute, you know.
So there's that kind of misunderstanding that does pervade a lot of those, as good as they can be.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. So you always have more books in the works. You got another one?
I do.
Coming soon to a publishing house near us?
The Three Most Humble People I Know and How I Taught the Other Two. Uh-huh. I have that one's coming up. No, actually, I do have a book coming out on how to get along with everybody.
Is that the gold gilded version you've done for yourself?
It's got my pictures on there, before and after pictures on there. It's me. yeah, I do have one coming out. It's they're holding it off because they want to use it to give to a general population. Mm-hmm. Okay, most of my books have a definite Catholic. Now that one more than any other. Right. Has a Catholic Christian flavor to it, but most of them are, you hopefully were just are just right. Some kind of common sense wisdom,
right?
And if the Catholic Church happens to be within it, okay.
Well, you're about as common as they come, so that's that's our own Dr. Ray Guarendi. Check out Family Faith Under Fire: Practical Answers to Everyday Challenges, proudly published by EWTN, available naturally through our EWTN Religious Catalog. And look for the entire interview on our YouTube channel and on our webpage as well, on-demand platform. I'm Doug Keck. We'll see you next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks.